Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Well, we say hello to John McClain now. What's up, Reed? Or what's up, John? Sorry.
That's close enough. I've been called worse.
Sorry, I'm looking at Reed and talking to you. I'm sorry. How are you? How are you feeling?
I hope Reed's not insulted. I'm certainly not.
Are you feeling okay?
Texans practice today. They have the 49ers coming in.
Okay.
Next 2 days for joint practices before they play Saturday. I asked Bill O'Brien. He loves joint practices like all coaches do. He would rather have more joint practices and fewer preseason games. And I asked him today, I said, let's see, 2 years ago they went to Richmond, Virginia, and had two practices against the Redskins, and there were so many fights, they ended the second day early. And then last year against the Patriots, they had none. And I asked him, because O'Brien is a stickler for no fights. He says, if you can't not fight in practice, how do you not fight during the game? It's lack of discipline. And he said he and Kyle Shanahan talked it over. Anything that gets you kicked out of a game is going to get you kicked out of practice. So you better be disciplined enough to avoid the fights that are really all over the country in a lot of joint practices.
John McClain is with us for the rest of the hour, talking anything that you want to with the NFL, and he can talk about it all. He is a legend in covering the league. Give us a call, 615-737-1045, 737-1045.
John, your reaction to Jalen Ramsey being suspended for a week by the Jags for going after a media member?
Well, was he really suspended for that, or the fact the fight carried over off the field and into a tunnel? I don't think for a second they suspended him for a week because of what he tweeted or yelled out. If they did that, then half the players in the league at one point or another would be suspended. But their fight, and you know Coughlin and Marrone are big on discipline, started on the field and then went off the field. So I also think this about, like, Antonio Brown was taking shots at Ed Bouchette yesterday. Ed's been covering the Steelers since 1984 for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And he was acting like Ed's making stuff up, and Antonio Brown made a fool out of himself, as most people pointed out. And those same guys ripped in the media, the same guys that get voted first team All-Pro by the media. There's all kind of things. They just don't think because they're not very smart.
The curious thing here that Hutton pointed out yesterday, I don't think has been made a big enough deal of with the Jacksonville fight, is that it was not two guys who were going against each other, which is 99% of training camp fights. It was two guys from the defensive line going at each other.
Yep.
Doesn't that strike you as odd?
That is very odd. Were they trying to break it up?
This looked like, from the video I saw that was tweeted out that everyone's saying that Jalen Ramsey was responding to, Dante Fowler is going after, I believe it was Ngakoue.
Yeah.
He's going after him with his pads off, helmet off, and Ngakoue has his helmet off and his pads off, and they're throwing. They want to go.
Well, Jalen Ramsey was mad because he hadn't gotten with the idea that this is, you know, this is 2018. Not 1987, where a lot of, well, that's not true. We used to write about everything we saw. Today, you do something on the field, you got to be ready. You know, everything goes viral. So to whine publicly about some guy shooting a video and post it is kind of ridiculous, makes him look stupid. And then Calais Campbell had to break it up when it picked up off the field. And Dante Fowler's gotten in a lot of issues, not just in college, but since he's been with them. And, you know, Calais Campbell is the leader of that defensive line. And Fowler doesn't start because Ngakoue's become a premier pass rusher. And, yes, that's very weird that it was guys from the same position and same practice, and then it extended off the field. I know I've told you guys this before, but every time I hear about a fight, it reminds me of the Oilers and how fights used to be when they had a linebacker, Lamar Lathan, and a guard, Kevin Donnelly, started fighting in practice, and then they were fighting off the field, and then we couldn't go in the weight room, but we were told they were fighting in a weight room and throwing dumbbells and barbells at each other. And, of course, we wrote about it, and they didn't deny it. And at the time, the coach, I can't remember if it's Jack Pardee or Jerry Glanville, they were, because they were old school, they thought, you know, hey, you know, boys will be boys. They used to encourage fights. Back when Mike Munchak and Bruce Matthews played in off season, they would be without pads. They would be in shorts and shirts. And they'd get fights between offensive linemen and the defensive linemen and the linebackers. And you'd see them out there getting bloody because they'd be fighting during practice in off season, and the coaches just ate it up.
John, this Roquan Smith delay in Chicago was just so dumb, and everybody knew it was dumb, yet the agent and the team find something to argue about, the potential for a suspension from the new rules to avoid guarantees. I mean, the whole league has the new rule. This is the only guy that held out over it.
Well, the Bears, they were ridiculous in trying to demand that he would have to give some money back if he was suspended. Because of the new rules, because he's a great linebacker, he's a hard hitter, he's good against the run, he can cover. I mean, would you want the guy thinking about before he made a hit, this could cost me some money? Plus, he missed a lot of time in which he could have been working to make sure he avoided breaking that helmet rule. And I'm wondering, was he represented by the same people that Joey Bosa was? Bosa had the longest holdout since the new CBA was in place in 2011. But if Roquan Smith turns out like Joey Bosa, they'll be happy and nobody will think about how much time he missed with what was a ridiculous holdout.
Let's discuss that helmet rule for just a brief moment, John, because we saw it happen in the preseason over the last week. But the new helmet rule is more than just helmet to helmet or yes. Leading with the helmet.
Yes, and you can't hit anybody anywhere with your helmet. And we saw a guy kicked out clearly, helmet to helmet. He would have been kicked out anytime, anywhere. And it's if you see a guy leading with his helmet, I feel bad because there's cases of guys leading with their shoulders to make a form tackle, and then it's the guy with the ball's fault that he gets hit in the helmet, and yet they're penalizing the defensive player.
And there's more confusion with hits in the league. There's a new protection of wide receivers, defenseless receivers, an emphasis put on this. And we saw this over the preseason this weekend in the first half of the Cardinals-Chargers game. Safety A.J. Howard times up a perfect hit, or what I thought was a perfect hit, on Sean Culkin, the tight end for the Chargers. Ball pops loose. The Cardinals recover a fumble, but the flag is thrown for a hit on a defenseless receiver. That's a 15-yard penalty, and the Chargers get the first down and the football back. But the replay shows that the tight end is clearly a step and a half going upfield while the safety Howard comes down to make this hit. I understand why fans would be outraged with that if this happens in the regular season. I think they have to get to the big issue of letting these officials know, hey, defenseless or not defenseless, you're ruining football when you throw this flag.
If a guy's running with the ball, if he takes a step, he's made the football move, the official just blew it. We're going to see more calls like that, and it's not the official's fault. It's the NFL's fault.
Yeah.
I agree. Mike Florio, who I'm loath to agree with too much, had a simple correction to the rule and just say that if you initiate contact with your head on purpose, not if it's not incidental, that fixes it at least. If you're trying to hit the guy with your helmet, it's a flag. But if you happen to hit your guy with your helmet because you're on the move and he's on the move, it's not. Now, I anticipate that's how it'll be enforced, but I don't understand that's not how it was written on a rule that was kind of snuck through without advertisement.
It is amazing how they botched the anthem policy and how they botched this. They didn't even have those definitive rule to the teams until about 2 weeks before training camp started. How bad is that?
You mentioned the anthem. Peter King, who's pretty tight with Goodell, went pretty strongly after Goodell in his Monday column, just saying commissioners solve things, and this is the biggest thing he's had to solve, and there's no sign that he's anywhere close to solving it. We're not that far from opening day. They need a rule, and they need to figure out how they're going to deal with this issue. Jerry Jones got all upset with Roger Goodell over the Ezekiel Elliott suspension. This is what owners should be upset with the commissioner for right now. And what are the odds that he comes up with something? I understand it's not an easy fix. That's why the guy's making millions and millions and millions of dollars.
They're not going to, I don't think, you know, the owners want the players to stand. They had a chance to put that rule in for 2 years. They didn't do it. Now the NFLPA, if you want something from the league, from the union, you're going to have to pay for it. And it's going to cost a lot in some form. You know, I don't know what that would be, but the union is not going to say, okay, we agree to it, because the union was embarrassed the first time because they didn't consult them. I say just let it go. Let guys do what they want to do. Last year there were 6 guys out of over 2,000. That's less than 1%. And then the owners made it a big deal again.
John, whenever there's a quote going around about Greg Williams and Todd Haley having an exchange during Browns practice, which I'm sure will be on Hard Knocks. If not tonight, it'll be next week. But I can't help but think of Buddy Ryan and Kevin Gilbride getting after it in that game or that practice. I'm curious if you thought the same.
It was a game against the Jets right before halftime, and the Oilers were leading and just bopping the Jets big time, and they got a turnover, and instead of running out the clock, they threw the ball, as they always did in a run and shoot, and it was intercepted. And so Buddy Ryan threw a punch at Kevin Gilbride, never connected. Receiver Curtis Duncan stepped in between. Folklore has Buddy landing a punch, but he didn't. Truth is, Kevin would have beat the hell out of Buddy Ryan if the players hadn't have stepped in. But history says Kevin Gilbride got his butt kicked, which was not the case. And the thing with Greg Williams and Haley, you guys know, your listeners know, Greg's a hothead. Greg's emotional. And so he is going to defend his players. And Todd Haley is that way. Now, what happened in that play, of course, is somebody got knocked into the quarterback. And Todd Haley lashed out at the defense. And Greg pops up and says, well, block him and you don't have to worry about that. So they started a string of F-bombs. And you know Hard Knocks is going to eat it up. Greg had laryngitis last week. I'm listening to him scream at his players, and he sounded like a cartoon. So hopefully he's got his voice back this week.
2 takeaways on Hard Knocks, and then we'll go to the phone. 615-737-1045. First, well, they're sitting around the table, John, and Hugh Jackson is like, until you're in this seat, you just don't know what goes into holding guys out. And whenever you're here and you're in this seat, you can do whatever you want to do, and I make the rules. And I'm thinking to myself, every coach in that room has to be looking at you like you're a joke, because you've won 1 game in 2 seasons, and you're saying that.
And Greg Williams and Todd Haley have both been in that chair.
Yeah.
With more success.
I thought Todd Haley saying what he did about not liking the way they let players off in practice was something that should have been said in private. He knew those cameras were on. You know Haley wants that job.
Yep.
You know Greg wants that job. And both of them want their side of the ball to be real good. So when Hugh Jackson gets fired, especially during the season, they got to pick an interim coach. And I thought Haley was out of line. I liked the way Hugh Jackson handled it. But you're right. I think probably most of them, inside at least, were rolling their eyes.
But he's not wrong about what he's saying. I mean, maybe you should have done it in private. And it's tough to have Todd Haley looking like the hero in something.
Yeah,
but I'm
no
watching
kidding.
That and I'm thinking, boy, Todd Haley sounds like the sane one in this conversation with what he's saying.
Yeah, to me, Veterans Day's offer for guys that have been in the league 8, 9, 10 years or more. Miles Garrett, in his second season, who didn't play the whole season because of injuries, is not a veteran who deserves a day off.
Preaching to the choir here, John. Second, Tyrod Taylor arrives to the facility at 5 a.m., and they have Hugh Jackson asking Baker Mayfield, hey, how early do you normally go to work? Do you know what time Tyrod gets here? And I'm thinking, Do you really need your quarterback there at 5 o'clock in the morning? Is that truly necessary? If your day gets going at 10 a.m. and Baker's there at 8, is that a problem?
Sure. Wouldn't you love it if Baker Mayfield had said to Coach, well, if I get here at 5 o'clock, will it help us win more than one game?
What's the earliest you know of a player arriving to the facility over the years?
I remember Gary Kubiak, who always got up at 4:30 in the morning and went to work, told me that tight end James Casey, who's now a coach at the University of Houston, used to always be there when he got there, doing either something physical or mental. And that's the only time I've ever heard of a player being at work at 5 a.m., unless it was training camp and they had practice at 7 a.m., which the Oilers used to do, and you would see a few guys stumble in their sleep over to the facility to start camp, but never unless your practice is early in the morning.
Let's go to Reed up on line one. Reed, thanks for being patient with us. Go right ahead, man.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, gentlemen. John, going into the year, I've never seen the AFC so weak going into the year. Can you tell me your three powerhouse teams and also the AFC South? I think it's a wide-open division. I think Tennessee and also Jacksonville is going to regress this year. Indianapolis with the addition of Luck and Quentin Nelson, that's two All-Pros on the offense, should definitely take a step forward. Give me your take, 1-4, AFC South, and your powerhouse teams, AFC also.
John, by the way, Reed has been the biggest proponent of Quentin Nelson that you've ever heard. That's why he suddenly dropped that. Oh, it's a return of two All-Pro players, Quentin Nelson and Andrew Luck.
Yeah, guy hasn't played a snap.
He's never played a snap in the NFL.
Well, I think most people would agree at this point with Reed. Quentin Nelson, supposed to be one of the best guard prospects to ever come into the NFL. Hopefully he'll stay healthy and do a good job helping protect Andrew Luck. As far as the AFC South, I sent in my predictions for the Chronicle football section Friday, and I have three teams from the South making the playoffs, and I think the only New England, of course, being the best team, Pittsburgh, I still think is second. And then I don't see anybody from the AFC North. I don't see anybody from the East other than the Patriots. You know, Kansas City with a second-year quarterback. Don't know if Andy Reid can win the division again. Maybe Chargers. I'm not picking the Chargers because, as I've told you guys, they don't have a home field advantage. I'm not big on what John Gruden's done. Denver with Case Keenum, I don't know. But I can make a case that the Texans, Titans, and Jaguars are better than all the teams I just mentioned, or at least as good other than New England and Pittsburgh.
John, if you took John Gruden out of the mix and all the sort of zany stuff that's gone on this offseason, then what do you think about the Raiders when you just look at their personnel?
Well, I think they've got good personnel, not great. It depends on Derek Carr coming back, trying to stay healthy. You know, they've got issues. And I wasn't impressed. I can't find anybody that says, man, boy, the Raiders did a great job in the offseason. I just don't see it. Now, maybe they'll go to the Super Bowl. Maybe Gruden will rekindle that magic he had in Tampa and Oakland. But on paper, at least, I don't see it.
I think the Chargers are a team that could be, if the Raiders are as John and I suspect them to be, and Kansas City's down while they're waiting on Mahomes, then I could see the Chargers being a team that would challenge. They started slowly last year.
How do you feel them not having a home advantage? They played better. Basically playing all road games.
Well, I don't think it's ideal, but I think they could use it kind of as a chip on their shoulder. And they finished last season 9-3 after their lousy start. So they consistently seem to get hurt and have, you know, disappear for a month at a time. But they're due. I used to always overpick
them. They lose in bunches and win in bunches.
Yeah.
May, it is remarkable the way Phillip Rivers stays healthy. That one time when they went to the championship game and he had a scope and he played at New England, I was there. They get spoiled having him, just like all these teams that have healthy quarterbacks, Eli Manning. You know, they just start to take them for granted. And the rest of us that have quarterbacks that can't stay healthy are so envious. So I think, Paul, as long as Phillip Rivers is upright, which he always is, they're good enough to beat just about anybody. But I just think somewhere that's going to bite them in the butt, not having you know, 27,000, 28,000 fans, and half of them being for the other team.
Hey, Dewan, say hello to John McClain.
Hey, John, what's happening, man?
All kind of things. It's football time, best time of the year.
Absolutely, absolutely. I can smell it in the grass. Hey, I have a question, a statement, and a challenge. So my question to you, John, did I hear you say earlier that the helmet rule, there's no contact with the helmet on any part of the body or just the crown of the helmet?
You can't lead with your helmet in any part of the opponent's body.
Okay, so here's my question. I played a little football myself. It doesn't make any difference how long you play. I almost think it's virtually impossible to tackle somebody without your helmet hitting any part of the body.
I don't disagree with
mask.
That.
Your face mask can hit.
I think what they've done, they have it when it comes to the catch rule, and Dewan, I'll let you finish, but I made the point, John, when it comes to the catch rule, they have everyone questioning what is a catch and what is not a catch. I wonder if this will get us to the point where we wonder what is a tackle and what is not a tackle.
Absolutely.
Just remember, the whole reason they put this in there is money. Money, because the owners don't want to have to pay out more money in concussion settlements, and so that's why they've legislated these rules.
Well, I think once it starts to affect some of the games and some of the outcomes of the game, something will change. There was one game, I can't remember which game it was, there was one of the running backs was trying to get to the goal line. This is going to happen every game. There's a point that he's trying to get to. When he's trying to get to that point, the opposition is coming at him. All of them are going to go low. Every one of them will duck their heads to either try to stop him from getting to that point, or he's going to try to duck his head to try to drive through it. Now, that's my statement. Here's the challenge that I have, Paul, for you guys on the set. What I'd like for you guys to do is go see if the Titans allow you to borrow some uniforms, helmets, and shoulder pads, and walk through the process of tackling and then put that up on your site. What I want you to see is when your body makes your shoulder even makes contact with the other person, your helmet is going to hit his helmet. No matter where you are. And so even if you hit somebody, they're dry. You're going to walk into it. But even if you drive through them, you may hit them low. But once you drive through and your body comes up, your helmet's going to hit their helmet. There's going to be penalties all over the place if this is allowed to happen.
Well, look, the rule is the rule. Now the question is the enforcement of the rule. Now we see how frequently they call it. Now we see if they find some of it incidental. Now we see the application of what Hutton asked about during when Cleet
Blakeman
was here about a quarterback sneak not really qualifying, about him not thinking it would be called.
It's about linear positioning.
Offensive line.
John, I had Paul go into the officials meeting and ask Cleet Blakeman, you know, they're stressing the linear position for players leading with the helmet. And I thought, well, this is the position for every quarterback sneak I've ever seen. So is that going to be outlawed now? Now, it's not going to be. But they are making specific rules for certain positions while, again, the quarterback can get away with it.
Just that term, the linear position, a football move. I mean, they come up with these terms that we've never heard, which just shows the preposterousness of it.
John, enjoy the joint practice. By the way, if you don't mind, take a listen to Big Al from the Little League World Series. We think that he may be related to you. Listen to his voice.
Hi, my name's Alfred D'Elia. At home, they call me Big Al, and I hit dingers.
That's your favorite player now, John, Big Al.
Big Al, I like
your guy, John.
He hits dingers.
Hey, have you received any flack from the media there because you get the optimal position for practice at the opposite sideline because of your injuries?
Well, they've got me a golf cart that's on the other side of the barrier where all are, so yes. I've taken a lot of good-natured grief, especially when I'm sitting there and the general manager or defensive coordinator come over before practice to see how I'm doing, and I can corner them for a little football talk and nobody else can do that. Yeah. I'm going to keep all this and keep wearing it and milk it as long as I can.
I used to think about that after I had elbow surgery. I just keep this sling every time I get on a plane. I'll just slip it on. I'll slide on the first people, get an exit row, and put the sling away over in the overhead.
John, thank you as always.
Take care.
All right.